The honey badger may be an international internet sensation, but Iowa is home to an equally tenacious species of badger. This hour, we'll meet the American badger. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today. Badgers have a reputation for being ferocious. They're hard to spot and are often mistaken for other Iowa species. But they do live peacefully among us. This hour, we'll learn about the lives and habits of these prairie predators, and we'd also like to hear your stories of badger encounters. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and although we don't see them very often, there are badgers living in Iowa, and wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today to introduce us to these mysterious creatures. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, I'm happy to be, and I'm happy to talk about this topic. I know you've been badgering me about it for months, and I've just been trying to weasel out of it, as it were.
Oh, wow. It's going to be a great hour.
Yeah. Well, it'll be a long one for you, but, you know.
It'll be fun for you. All right. That's all that really matters.
Right.
All right. Well, since you already mentioned badgers and weasels, let's start with, what is a badger, Jim?
Yeah, it's a member of the weasel family, the mustelids, and that includes the mink, the otter, the wolverines, the fishers, badgers, and it is a family, all members of whom have some glands near their anal opening that they fill with musk, and they use this musk primarily, includes otters as well, they use this musk primarily to mark their territories, but it can be sort of used in defense, and the most obvious one of that, the one that we think of that uses a scent as a musk scent as a defense, are the skunks. The skunks used to be part of the weasel family, primarily because of that. But I never thought that they belonged there. And in fact, the International Mammalian Society has removed them, and skunks now have their own family, all their own. And the reason they don't have is that most of the members of the weasel family have a process called delayed implantation, and skunks do not. And so it was kind of odd to me that they were there. And they're not long, like most members of this weasel family are. The skunks are sort of chunky and short. So badgers are also chunky and short, but they are a member of the weasel family.
So do you think they all got grouped together just because they're a little stinky?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. So, and in fact, the DNA says that skunks really are not really that close to the rest of the mustelids, so they remove them pretty much from the family.
Now, I have wanted all of my life to see a badger in Iowa.
Ah, yes.
And I've seen one dead on the road, which was not what I was hoping for.
Right, right.
And last summer, I did get to see a pair of badgers, but I wasn't in Iowa. I saw a pair of badgers hunting in a prairie dog town in South Dakota
when
I was on vacation. So that was a big thrill. But why? Why don't I ever see badgers, Jim?
Well, this is tall grass prairie, whereas South Dakota is short grass prairie or mid grass prairie, depending on where you were, and it is much easier to see them out there. They're certainly present here, but they are, because our grasses are higher here, and we don't have as much grassland as South Dakota has, so it's not they're not as numerous here. And they're quite secretive animals, mostly nocturnal. And this is really interesting because when you read up on badgers, it says, well, they could be diurnal, coming out in the daytime, or nocturnal, coming out at nighttime, but mostly nocturnal. And that means that
We don't really know because we don't ever see them.
Well, it makes no sense that they would be nocturnal because they primarily dig in the ground and eat things underground, what are called fossorial animals. They will take stuff on the surface. They're not particularly, they're not super runners or anything. They can move along quite well, but they primarily take things underground. So it doesn't matter whether they hunt in the day or the night because it's dark down there anyway. So I suspect that they're primarily when humans aren't around, they're diurnal, and when humans when they're around humans, like they are in most of the state of Iowa, they tend to be nocturnal. Many critters do that. Foxes do the same thing. So.
Badgers, what kind of habitats do we find them in Iowa? You mentioned the tall grass prairie. Now, of course, there isn't that much of that
right.
in Iowa. So where do they live these days?
Well, they live where there are more grasslands than there are trees. And that means primarily sort of the western, I would say, two-thirds of the state, especially the western third. They're most numerous in the southern portion. I would say if you divided the state from northwest to southeast, they're more numerous in that southwest half of the state than they are in the northeastern half of the state. And that's where certainly the grasslands are more numerous. But they're adaptable enough to coexist in some farm environments, particularly if the farms are a little more diverse, that they might have grassed waterways or grassed terraces, some hay fields, that sort of thing. Any place that you might find, for example, 13-line ground squirrels or pocket gophers or woodchucks, you'll also find badgers because badgers prey on all three of those.
Okay. Now, of course, they're burrowing creatures.
Right.
Is there anything that distinguishes their burrows? If you are run across a burrow in the ground, can you look at it and think, oh, that might belong to a badger?
Yeah, you sure can, because this is an animal that walks on all four feet, but they're low to the ground. They have short legs. I have one here in the studio with me. And he's running around right now. No, he's not. He's laying here on the table very quietly. It's a study skin from the departmental collection. And their legs are only about the length of their tail, which is 4 or 5 inches long. So they're fairly close to the ground. They're also sort of flat, if you will, elliptical if you looked at them from the front. And so their burrows are also sort of elliptical. It's sort of like if you took a circle, an 8 or 10 inch tunnel, and squished the top of it down, it would sort of be oval, and that's how the animal is shaped. Now, there's another critter that has 8 to 10 inch burrows that we commonly see in cities and towns and gardens and farms and everywhere all over the state, and that's the woodchuck. We've talked about them on other programs, and woodchucks are just a big ground squirrel. And their 8 to 10 inch burrows are round. So when you see this big excavation of dirt, you have to look at the tunnel. Now, because you can't necessarily see the tunnel, what you want to do is you want to get your head down there real close and look at look at the shape of the tunnel. And if you hear a low growl coming, get your head out of there. So it's more than likely a badger hole if it's elliptical in shape. So
okay.
Yeah.
So, you're full of good advice.
Absolutely.
That's really terrific. And would they be in, often in the country, of course, we'll have ditches. And we see a lot of groundhog burrows in ditches because it's a great way to burrow into the side of
right.
a hill.
Easy.
Do badgers look for hills or do they just dig a hole in the ground?
They primarily tend to look for grassland, and because that's where they're going to find, again, there are three primary prey, and that is ground squirrels, 13-line ground squirrels, as well as woodchucks, and then also pocket gophers. all three of which are grassland species. Woodchucks will get into woodlands as well, woodland edges especially. They'll also eat moles. There's dispute about whether their diet includes earthworms, but I'd be surprised if it didn't. They will also eat ground nesting birds, things like bank swallows that burrow into the sharp, straight up and down mud banks along rivers, and can go back a meter or more into the earth. It's surprising that this little bird can burrow that far, but they do. And so they're sometimes prey for badgers. They'll eat some other ground nesting birds that they can find. They'll also eat snakes and just about anything they can come up on.
All right.
They're not afraid of much of anything.
Well, and we'll talk more about that after our break. But all right, so we know what they eat. We know roughly where they live. And as I mentioned, I don't see a lot of them. Are there many of them in Iowa?
This is really interesting. There are lots more. I think like many species of wildlife, particularly those that are low to the ground, most people don't see them very often at all, even if you're looking for them. And in part, it's because they blend in very, very well. They have sort of a cream-colored fur, but they look sort of grizzled because their guard hairs, those long hairs that stick out longer than their creamy under fur, actually have sort of black streaks in them, and so brown and black. So they'll blend into that grassland environment really well, and their feet are quite dark brown. So and the stripe that comes down their face makes them hard to see as well. But they are much more common than, particularly, as I said, in the sort of southwestern half of the state than the northeastern part. But much more common than we think. In fact, these are considered a fur-bearing animal so that they can be trapped during the fall and winter season. And on average, long-term average, is about 750 to 900 or so animals, badgers, taken every year. That probably includes a few who pick up, a few trappers who pick up a roadkill now and then as well. But you say, well, gee, what do they use the fur for? It used to be used, those long guard hairs used to be used for shaving brushes. I haven't seen a shaving brush in a number of years, so they're made out of artificial bristles now, but
right.
Those long guard hairs used to be made into shaving brushes and paint brushes.
Interesting.
Very fine paint.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about badgers on Talk of Iowa with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. You are welcome to join the conversation with your badger encounters. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the American badger. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with me today. He's Emeritus Associate Professor of Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University. We are getting to know the badger, and we'd love to hear from you as well. If you have badger encounters, observations, or questions, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jim, before the break, we were talking about how common badgers might be in Iowa today. And you were saying that about 750 to 900 get taken during trapping season every year. You also talked at length about how difficult they are to see.
Right.
So are you saying that we don't really know how many there are in Iowa?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
We don't know precisely how many they are and how many trappers take. And if you look, I've got access to long-term records of trappers taking badgers in Iowa, and the long-term records, it all depends on the price of the fur. Right now, a badger fur is last couple of years has been $10, $12 per hide. And you think about that, and you think, $10 or $12, I'm going to have to get out and set traps, and I've got to find the general area where they might be in the middle of the winter. They don't spend a lot of time. They're not out foraging a lot, so I really better do it early. Also, their fur will get what's called rub because they dig underground, and those nice long guard hairs that you want on a prime fur are going to be rubbed off, are going to be gone. So I've got to do it early, and I got to get out there and find it. And like you say, it's not easy to find them. So I was surprised that there were that many taken every year. But some years there have been as many as over 3,000 taken. So
their fur is not particularly in demand, so that
right.
may not be a number that tells us that much about them. But we've
right.
talked about their habitat, and this tall grass prairie is their native habitat, at least in
Bingo.
Iowa.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of habitat pressures on badgers.
Yeah, there really are. If you look at their range primarily, and it goes actually from parts of Canada. When I was up in northern Alberta working my master's degree the last century, there were badgers clear up into, because those are the Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Western Ontario. They're found that far east into Western Ontario, but these are primarily a plains species. So the Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba are all what are called the prairie provinces. And so it reaches down through our Great Plains, clear down into Mexico, through parts of Arizona, the Sonoran Desert. So badgers fairly widely, the American badger is fairly widely distributed from Canada to Mexico, but it's primarily restricted to the Great Plains. Does get as far east in the U.S. as into Ohio, so they're not an uncommon animal, but they're just seldom seen. Unlike their European distant cousins, in which a lot of our language, badgering the witness, that sort of thing, that all comes from Old English, referring to the European badger. Our badgers are pretty much solitary critters, except during the breeding season. And whereas in Europe, that European badger is a colonial living species. They'll live in these huge warrens that may take up several acres eventually, and they will stay in those burrow systems, and they're really intricate burrow systems. They've been fairly well studied. They'll stay in there for decades, perhaps even centuries. Whereas our badgers are very, very different than that. They're solitary. Their burrows are temporary. There was a Minnesota female a decade or so ago that had a radio collar put on her. And you can imagine with a big sort of linebacker type of neck, it's hard to get a radio collar to stay on a badger. and they're digging underground. But they followed her, and it was fascinating because she covered over 1,900 acres in a year's time, and had in that 1,900 acres over 50 burrows.
Wow.
And she was never found in the same burrow on consecutive nights.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it's pretty amazing. They move around a lot, and they move in part into the, where's the best food supply. I got a call once from the golf course here in Ames that they thought they had a badger, and I thought, well, yeah, could be, but maybe it's a woodchuck. No, I think it's a badger. And so I went out and took a look, and sure enough, they did have a badger, a badger hole. I put my head down there and heard a low growl and saw the shape of the tunnel. But I looked around and I said, you had some other problem here before. And they said, what's that? And I said, well, you had quite a colony here of 13 line ground squirrels. Oh, yeah, we do. And a lot of golf courses do. And so the Badger, I said, well, the Badger is just moving in to kind of clean that up for you. You know, he was cleaning out that he or she was cleaning out that that 13 line ground squirrel colony. So, and then it up and moved, moved.
When it was done.
Yeah, yeah, maybe half a mile or three quarters of a mile away. I found got a call from somebody else, and so again to the one of the prairie areas, the Ames High Prairie. Where it stayed for a little while and then moved on again.
Interesting. So, now, yeah. As I mentioned earlier, the badgers that I actually got to see in the wild, I saw two badgers together hunting in a prairie dog town. Wow. Are they social?
No, they're not very
so
social at all.
That was very surprising.
I wonder if these were, well, it you know, it's interesting because there's this sort of myth that badgers and coyotes hunt together. And everything I've read and seen myself on this, I don't think they I think coyotes are very, very bright and they'll take advantage of situations. So they see a badger sort of tunneling around an area, hunting around a prairie dog town or a ground squirrel colony or something, and they'll take advantage of that. The coyote will sit and wait. And because they're much faster than a badger is, if the badger scares something out and isn't able to grab it, the coyote can. So this whole myth has evolved around how badgers and coyotes hunt cooperatively.
Interesting.
And I think it's only to the advantage of the coyote.
Taking advantage of each other, right? Right,
not to the advantage of the badger. So it's a fascinating sort of old story that that comes up.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right, they are not particularly social creatures.
No, not at all.
How about how many young would they have in a year?
Well, they have the female is capable of feeding eight at a time, but they almost never have that. I mentioned earlier that they do this thing called delayed implantation, and I mentioned this before in the program in relation to weasels and other members of the weasel family, and it's a fascinating way of taking care of sort of birth control within a species, because they breed in late summer, early fall, meaning August, September, probably in Iowa. And the embryos develop to a certain stage. It's about 50 cells, and it's called the blastocyst stage. And this doesn't get implanted on the uterus. It floats around throughout the winter. And then depending upon the condition of the female, either late winter, mid to late winter, depending on her condition, if she's in very good shape, then she may implant as many as five or six. Or she may, if she's in very poor condition, her body flushes all those blastocysts out, and she has no young. But the average is 2 to 3 young. But usually it's from 1 to 5, but usually it's 2 to 3 that she'll actually birth.
So, all right.
But it's a fascinating, you know, way of.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what
making sure that it's the right time.
Exactly.
And it means that the male is long gone.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, the male takes absolutely no part in the raising of the young. The little ones are so the gestation period is really much shorter than it appears, because the blastocysts will implant anywhere depending on how far north these are, and in the southern part it's sooner, it's more like in December. Whereas in the northern parts of the range up in Alberta, it might be late February before they actually implant. And so it's just a few weeks in, and the young are born naked and blind and can't hear. And in a few weeks, a matter of 5 to 6 weeks, the young are coming out of the den, are weaned, and shortly, not too long after that, will be kind of on their own. And I wonder if you might have seen
siblings,
a couple of siblings,
right,
hunting. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, hunting in the prairie dog town, which would be a great place for them. So.
Yeah, they looked pretty happy.
Yeah.
I may be anthropomorphizing there.
Did you notice, were you able to see their claws at all?
No.
Oh, it's amazing. They're really, these buggers are made for digging. They have these massive shoulder muscles and like I say, a sort of a squat neck. They're built like a linebacker, and their toenails on their front feet are about an inch and a half long each, and so they're really great for digging. And their hind feet are also important because they can that kicks out the dirt behind them. So their burrows will often be this sort of excavation, you know, of dirt, and so they're digging with their front feet quite rapidly. They can very quickly cover themselves particularly in sandy loam kinds of soils like we have around the state, and will dig themselves out of sight and kick up the dirt, behind them.
And apparently can dig many, many burrows.
Yes, they certainly can. Yeah.
Right.
It's why they were often, I think, considered to be a hazard by farmers and ranchers. A cow might fall in the hole, or a horse might, and like that. And perhaps they did, but it sure didn't happen very often. But as a result, they were often shot readily by farmers and ranchers. And
well, let's talk a little bit about their temperament here, because that may have something to do with why they were considered to be a hazard as well. And let's listen. And this is what I think. This is the sound of two badgers engaged in play behavior. They're in a zoo, and let's just listen to what they have to say. All right, and those are fairly happy badgers.
Sounds like a couple of boys I saw at the fireworks
right.
on the other night.
And so I can imagine that if they are threatened, they sound even more ferocious.
Yeah, you'll
hear. And, of course, they are members of the weasel family, which
is a
family that has a reputation for ferocity.
That's right. And certainly between the wolverine and the badger, they are, I won't say totally fearless, but they don't fear many things at all, and they have a heck of a temper. That may be why they're solitary as well. They spend a lot of time alone thinking about how the world is not fair. I don't know.
Not to project or anything.
That's right.
Have you been spending a lot of time alone lately, Jim?
No.
So now they do have this really remarkable kind of screaming sound, and that's something that people report hearing with badgers in the neighborhood. They may not have any idea what it is.
Right. And if they do hear it, more often it's almost a squealing, growling. They're a set of sounds like that. They're mainly to warn off other critters to keep them from getting close, and so they're not a territorial sign or anything like that. But yeah, you could wonder what that was. That's for sure.
Right, and be a little alarmed by it. And people who encounter badgers often report being very frightened.
Absolutely. Well, they'll hiss and growl and kind of jump at you and, you know, stomp their feet
to protect themselves.
Absolutely. And then they'll dig like crazy to get right into the ground to get out of your way.
So that's how they would escape, is to dig a hole?
Yeah. Yeah, and there aren't many predators on these guys.
I was just going to ask that, and Jim and Adele also wanted to know that. Are there any predators?
Yeah.
Humans, obviously.
Humans, automobiles and trucks especially. That's probably the number one cause of mortality, in fact, in our landscape in particular, are getting hit by cars and trucks. In farther west, where they're much more common, things like cougars or mountain lions will take them. Occasionally, a golden eagle in the far west, in the western mountains, will take young ones. I would not want to be a golden eagle who tried to take a full-grown one. It would be quite a fight. So these guys are carnivores, so they have long canine teeth and very strong jaws, able to bite through just about anything they want.
And you already mentioned the claws and those digging muscles. I'm sure if they were employed, they could be.
So they're a handful for most of anything. So badgers and wolverines are similar, that they're taken occasionally, I'm sure, but primary mortality is in much of the landscape is humans or human factors, including such things as fragmentation. Our landscape in Iowa is totally fragmented by roads. That means there are roads that divide up most of our landscape, as we know, from farm-to-market roads and highways and everything. We have almost every square mile of the state with some sort of road, on either side of it. That means that animals have to cross that road. And particularly since so much of our landscape, especially now, is in row crop agriculture, the grasslands that are available to them and the habitat for their primary prey species is less and less and less and fewer and far between. So they have to travel much farther across many more roads. So that fragmenting of the landscape, of the habitat in the landscape, is very, very serious for critters like this, because the grasslands, the large grasslands, are fewer and far between, and getting between them is very difficult for them.
It also makes it nothing short of a miracle that they can actually find another badger to mate with.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the males, of course, have larger territories than the females, but they're about in late summer, early fall, hunting for a mate, and they're using that scent, and the female is as well. They're using that scent marking to track down a potential mate. But you're absolutely right, Charity. It's very difficult for them. In a very fragmented landscape, it becomes more and more difficult every year.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We are talking about the American badger, the badgers of Iowa, this hour with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, your observations, your badger encounters. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour, Jim Pease, wildlife biologist, emeritus professor at Iowa State University. We are talking about badgers this hour, and you are welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Blair is on the line right now. Hi, Blair.
Yes.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I just recently finished reading a book called Incident at Hawks Hill by Alan Eckert. And it's a story that takes place in 1870 in Saskatchewan, up around Winnipeg. And this boy, this six-year-old boy, wandered off into the prairie, got lost. Everybody looked for him for days, couldn't find him, gave him up for dead. His family kept searching for him. 2.5 months later, his older brother is out searching and sees this young boy crawl out of a badger's den. And apparently for 2.5 months, he had been adopted, protected, and taken care of by this female badger. Because as soon as the little boy came out of the badger's den, the female badger came out also. And it's just a fascinating story and really interesting animals. And they'd be, if anybody's interested, again, the book is Incident at Hawks Hill by Alan Eckert.
Okay. All right,
and it was one of those Newbery Honor books. It was, of course, it's a fictional account. And I think, Blair, thank you so much for sharing that. But, Jim, it also, it kind of makes me, just furthers the mystery of this animal. Because, I mean, one of the reasons I have always been obsessed with badgers is because of the Chronicles of Narnia books. They are a species that shows up in fiction, and it really fire our imagination because we don't know that much about them.
Yeah, and it's fired imaginations even way back because of the European badger, where literature often involved them because of these incredible warrens that would go be in the same place for, you know, decades and decades, like I said earlier, probably centuries. And I think the stories that came out of that, everything from, although, again, it's a rabbit warren, but Alice in Wonderland and falling into the rabbit hole, and that whole business is quite fascinating to people. These guys, I doubt that a female badger would ever actually. There are lots of these stories where wolves do the same thing and bears, and you know, adopt young humans. But it's a great story, and it does further the fascination with them. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Lee is on the line in Slater. Hi, Lee.
Hi. How are you guys doing? Got a question about holes in my fence rows and my terraces.
Right.
I'm curious. I know I have coyotes, and I know I had a badger in one fence row about 10 years ago.
Because
she confronted me when I was out for a run and did not back off.
That's right.
Yeah. But I'm curious because I go out and I see these little holes. It looks to me like maybe coyotes are just digging bowls out or something. And I'm curious if the badgers make those little holes in the terraces and the fence rows, just kind of trial holes, or what do you think is going on?
Well, it could be several things. Certainly lots of things dig. If these are rather shallow holes and maybe, you can see the bottom of them. Is that what you're talking about when you're saying?
Okay. Sometimes they go in a little ways, and every once in a while I'll find a deep burrow, you know, in a fence row or something.
Yeah, often those are woodchucks. Again, you look for, and they're both badgers and woodchucks will be, the holes will be 8 to 10 inches in diameter. Woodchucks usually more towards the 8-inch side, but the difference is the tunnel themselves on woodchucks are round, and on badgers, they're like squish, they're oval. More like the shape of the critter. So, I was saying earlier in the program, you got to get down and actually look at the tunnel. Don't reach in there, but you can see the shape of the tunnel if you look, and that'll tell you. Now, badgers will eat voles. In fact, especially in the wintertime, when you think about the species that they're depending on, especially 13-legged ground squirrels and woodchucks, those are both hibernating animals. And so they hibernate below ground. Well, the badger isn't going to find them very easily. Plus, the soils are frozen, sometimes at least the first foot or so. While they may come upon, through their digging activity, come upon a hibernating animal underground, and that probably happens, they have to switch their diet to other things, and it includes things like voles, which are little mouse-like critters, moles as well. They'll eat moles, although the habitat of moles is more tends towards the woodland areas than the grassland areas, so they don't eat a lot of moles. Uh-huh. But they'll often ship to voles in the early winter, especially when the other critters go into hibernation. So, they will dig a little bit on the surface because that's where the voles are primarily. They're just right on that on the surface of the ground between the soil and the grass, and they run in these little tunnels that you'll often see in the springtime when the snow grows away. You'll see these grass tunnels right on the surface, and those are vole tunnels usually. So,
all right, interesting. Fence rows are a wonderful place to see evidence of wildlife.
Yes.
All
yeah.
right. Anne is on the line next in Rock Island. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
Hi. And you're a wildlife rehabilitator who actually raised a badger?
Yes. I rehabbed for about 30 years. Last spring, a year ago, was when I got my first badger. It's kind of sketchy about where she came from. She came actually from some kids who were playing with it. and the man who rescued it brought it to me.
Huh.
She was a little bigger. She was in April, and she already weighed like 4 pounds.
Wow.
So she was a little bigger, and she, the man had had her for a couple of days before he got a hold of me, and his wife had been feeding her with a bottle.
Wow.
That went away real fast.
Right, right.
She just, nah, don't want that, but did really good on the canned dog food.
Uh-huh.
And anything I would give her, we tend to, I don't raise a lot of carnivores, but, you know, the
right.
casualties of bunnies and stuff, I freeze.
Sure.
She would eat the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, skin, bones, everything, wow. gone. And I finally got a hold of the conservation guys up by Savannah, where there's federal and state preserves up there,
uh-huh.
and that's where she got released. It's a short grass sand prairie.
Fantastic.
I figured that was probably the best habitat for her.
You bet. You bet.
Well, and
perfect.
You got to really watch her up close and personal. So what
yes.
did you learn about badgers?
Well, she wasn't, I mean, she was young, so she wasn't vicious. That wasn't a problem. But the way she moved, she was in a big enclosure, but I had to get her out like once a day to clean it. And the way she would move across the floor was just, it was like a strip of carpet moving.
That's a great description.
Her legs were so short, you know, but it was just, it was graceful. It wasn't at all clumsy
right,
and
right.
just like a strip of, and they do like to play.
Oh, yes,
As I was cleaning, she would be fascinated by the movement of my pants leg, and she would usually grab the hem of my pants and try to tug. And,
that's
and
great.
And so I'd get a rag, and we'd play tug for a while, you know.
Wow.
But she was really great, and like I said, but she got to be about 8 pounds, and I decided this has got to go.
Yeah, that's a good age, and to I can't imagine rehabbing an adult badger. Their temperament just, I think, would not do very well in captivity at all. But a young one like that who's hungry and can be acclimated to food, I hope she was able to actually search for her own food. And that's once they leave the den at around 5 or 6 weeks, the mother, she weans them, but will feed them solid food for a while. And you mentioned rabbits, and in fact, they do take rabbits. I imagine it's rather difficult for them to catch them. They either have to surprise them, or they get young ones, perhaps still in the hole.
Yeah, these were young ones that didn't survive. Rabbits
sure.
are really notoriously hard to raise.
Right, yeah. right, yeah. And Charity knows that too. So, and so they will eat some rabbits, and the female, the mother will often give them some solid food. It's very interesting that it adapted so quickly to essentially scavenging on a dog food kind of thing. And certainly, like most predators, they're going to be opportunistic. They'll eat whatever is available. And I think at that age, she was 8 pounds. She was nearly full grown by that time. The females average 10, 11 pounds, adult females. So that's about right to release her. I hope she did well.
Right. Anne, thank you so much for calling. What a wonderful perspective
that's
to
great.
Share.
Yeah.
Here are a couple of, there are a few other people on the line who have had different kinds of encounters with badgers. Steve is on the line in Iowa Falls. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. This is a 60-year-old memory that's indelible. I was enjoying summer at my beloved grandparents north of Hampton in a wooded area, and as was my habit, was out exploring nature, crawled up the top of a wood pile,
uh-huh.
and was face to face with a badger about 2 feet away.
I'll be darned.
Looking at it, and my childhood impression was, by golly gee, I saw a lion. And it was, I don't know how many years it was before I finally tumbled to the fact that, no, it was a badger.
Yeah. Did he bare his teeth at you and growl?
For a few seconds, we just stared at each other. He didn't seem perturbed.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
So
interesting.
There he was on the top of the wood pile as I got to the top of the wood pile.
Well, I'll be darned. And certainly made an impression.
Have not forgotten that particular memory.
Great story.
Oh, Steve, thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, a lot of people who do encounter badgers, again, as we mentioned, they're protecting themselves, and they can sound incredibly ferocious when they do that. And people who've gotten them in live traps, I know, have been really frightened and had a hard time figuring out what to do to release them from the live trap.
Sort of like releasing a skunk. You approach very quietly and very carefully, and you take two long sticks in order to release them. You don't grab the trap with your hand, that's for sure.
Right. We have a question from Steve. We've talked about the different relatives of the badgers, and the wolverine has come up a few times. Are there wolverines that live in Iowa?
No. Wolverines probably were never here. They're a woodland critter. They're a critter of the north country of the boreal forest and farther north, and they just don't they wouldn't do well here at all. And probably never have been in Iowa. I suppose never is a long time, and you might have had one wander in, but they're not a critter that is native to this tall grass prairie state at all.
Now, we've talked about the segmentation of habitat in Iowa. That's definitely a pressure on badgers. We've also talked about the fact that we don't necessarily know how many badgers are here. What are some of the other pressures on these creatures in Iowa?
I would say the number one pressure is just loss of habitat, and then the fragmentation of that's left. And it certainly is the badger, in a way, is one of the poster children for that kind of fragmentation and loss of habitat. They're not in trouble, as we think of them as being of conservation concern or anything, or on any of our lists. There certainly are in some states, other states around the nation. In California, they're considered, I think, a species of special concern. But they certainly are under pressure constantly as we build faster roads, we put fences up so critters can't get across them. We put more land under cultivation or under concrete, building cities and towns and factories. And, you know, we take away that grassland. That is absolutely the number one pressure. And we take away the species then that that inhabit those grasslands. They certainly have been affected in the Great Plains by coyote poisoning that was done especially in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and still is done somewhat today, because the poisonous baits that are put out for coyotes will kill anything that that comes upon them, including badgers. And so they got impacted by that. And like many species, by the turn of the last century, without any bag limits or daily limits or when you could hunt them or how many or anything, like many, many species, including deer and elk and bison and everything, by the turn of the last century, by 1900, their populations were really bottoming out. And in the 1930s, the trapping records go back that far. In the 1930s, there were a dozen or so taken across the whole state of Iowa. So
they did become very rare, as so many creatures,
like so many species,
did in Iowa. Now you told your golf course story earlier. If you do have badgers living on your property, what are your recommendations for people?
Well, if you can possibly just tolerate them, do so. They're helping clean up from an economic standpoint. They're taking care of some of the other rodent populations, in particular things like pocket gophers, 13-legged ground squirrels, woodchucks. They're eating them, and they will only stay there long enough where they can reduce those populations, then they'll move on. So they're not likely to be there very long. Even a female with young in a den, if she's disturbed or feels like, geez, the food isn't close enough, she's going to pick up those young and move to another den, just as that female I mentioned in the Minnesota study moved quite frequently, all over the landscape. So they're not going to be there for long. I would say tolerate them and enjoy them. Certainly don't let your dog get into contact with them, or your cat,
right.
because, in fact, the dachshund was actually bred in Europe for hunting European badgers, which is pretty amazing when you think of dachshunds today.
It's true, but you might, especially if you have a dog that maybe was bred to do it, they might get really excited if
right.
they see a den.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Oh, well, Jim, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease joins us once a month to talk about Iowa's wild creatures and some of our wild places as well. Talk of Iowa is produced at Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.